Sure Shame Podcast, shining a light to the nations.
Shalom, everyone. I'm Bill Cloud, and I want to welcome you to our program, Returning to Our Roots. We have been talking about living sacrifices. We've been talking about how God's people are called to be such, how we follow in the example of Abraham, to do the works of Abraham. So today we're going to begin to look closely at this journey that Abram took before he was Abraham, leaving Ur, leaving country, family, father's house. And here's why. We've discussed that commitment that he had to do what God had called him to do. That's why he left everything. That's why he obeyed God's command, because he was focused on the purpose in all this. And the purpose was that through him and through his seed, all the nations of the earth would be blessed. To accomplish this, again, he had to leave everything behind. And he had to set himself apart from everything that was familiar, everything that was common. He had to make the decision not to conform himself to the world that surrounded him, whether that was in Ur, in Haran, or even later on in the land of Canaan. And so then, I say that to make this point. Because we are the seed of Abraham, according to Galatians 3:29, we are admonished to do the same. That is, to understand our purpose is to be a source of blessing to all the nations on the earth. And if we're going to fulfill that purpose, we have to be focused on that, and we have to be committed to presenting ourselves as a living sacrifice, to do the works of Abraham, meaning that we have to be willing to leave anything and everything that would hold us back and prevent us from being what God has called us to be and prevent us from doing what God has purposed that we do. And so with that, I want to go back to a few verses that we read several weeks ago from Romans chapter 12, where Paul tells us this: I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, a living korban, if you'll recall, holy, kadosh, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And so what is that good, acceptable, and perfect will of God? That we love Him with all of our heart, all of our soul, all of our strength, and so that we can fulfill His purpose in us and through us, individually and collectively, to be a light to those in darkness, to be a source of blessing. And so in Abraham's life, we see that he had to abstain from mingling and mixing with the ways and deeds of the people he lived among. He had to change his way of thinking. He had to change his way of living. And he had to abandon everything that he had been familiar with that would have negatively influenced him, so that he could have his mind renewed and so that he could be conformed to God's purposes and God's ways and not be conformed to the ways of the world. And so again, like him, that's what we're called to do. We're called to be that light to the nations. And we cannot be a light to the nations if we are continually acting like the nations. The only way to help the nations, frankly, is to come out from among them and to be a separate people. I'm reminded of a story that I've been fascinated with for years. In fact, we've done teaching on it. Maybe some of you have seen the teaching we did here on the Titanic and some of the prophetic elements of that story. And while I'm not here to discuss the details of all that, there is a principle that comes out of that story that is something we can apply to what we're talking about. And that's this. If you imagine that you were on the deck of the Titanic, and after all the warnings of icebergs and all these different things, and you were listening to the warnings, but you couldn't get anyone else on board this ship to listen to the warnings that were coming, and then the ship strikes the iceberg, you have a choice to make. You have a decision. If your motivation is to help the people that are on this ship, you can choose either to stay on it and try to help them, or you can decide to do something else. So if you were to stay on the ship with them, which is sinking, and it's going to go down into icy waters, Once the ship dips beneath the sea, are you really going to be able to help them? You're going to die right along with them. So you make a decision to get in the lifeboat. That's the only way that's going to lead to life. So you get in the lifeboat, but once you get into that small little lifeboat and you're out here on this vast ocean and you see this huge ship, it's just hard to comprehend that this ship is going to go down and this little lifeboat is going to stay afloat. Hard to believe. So you get in the lifeboat, but you don't stray too far from the big ship because, see, that offers a sense of security. That's something familiar. You feel like if you could just stay a little close to it, even though you've left it physically, you haven't left that ship with your heart. Kind of like Lot's wife. And so if you stay close to the ship, even though you're in the lifeboat, when the Titanic goes down and the suction begins to pull, you know what's going to happen to those lifeboats that are right next to it? They're most likely going to go down with that ship. And so the only way that you're going to be able to fulfill your purpose in helping those people who have no idea what's about to happen is to come out of that ship, get in the lifeboat, and be set apart. So when the ship sinks, the suction doesn't pull you down. And so only then would you be in a position that you could go back and that you could help those people who are desperately clinging to life. The point is, we cannot be a source of blessing to the people and to the nations. We cannot be a light to the nations if we're acting like the nations, staying on the ship. We cannot be a light to the nations. We cannot be a source of blessing to the nations if we set ourselves apart like Lot's wife did, but yet our heart never leaves. We can't help them. We can't be a source of blessing to them. The only way that we can fulfill that purpose is to come out from among them and be a set apart people. That is how we help them. Because that's the only way they're going to see the distinction between light and darkness. And so I hope you understand my analogy here is that Abraham had to come out of Ur. He had to come out from Haran. And he had to live a set apart life. He had to be a stranger, a sojourner to the Canaanites. He couldn't involve himself in their culture and their ways and their mindset. He had to be a set apart individual and family so that he could be a source of blessing to the Canaanites, but not just the Canaanites, but through him and through his seed to all the nations of the earth. And so he had to leave his family. He had to leave his country. He had to leave his father's house. Because God stressed, here's why, in Genesis chapter 12, verse 3, I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. When we read Genesis chapter 12, verses 1, 2, and 3, typically the word or the concept that we'll focus in on is blessed. I will be blessed. You will bless me. You'll curse those people, but you'll bless me. Well, guess what? He blesses Abraham. He blesses Abraham's seed so that they can be a blessing. But now I want to put a little twist on this. There is a rabbinic commentary that says that the phrase, and in you shall be blessed, has another connotation. And it's derived at by looking at the Hebrew word that's used there, and you will be blessed, Venivrechu. Venivrechu, it comes from the term barach, which means to bless. But venivrechu is related to a Mishnaic term. The Mishnah is Jewish commentary. And in the Mishnah, this Jewish commentary, they use the same term to talk about intermingling or grafting, would be the better way to put it. You know, like you take the branch of a tree and you graft it into the rootstock of another tree. In other words, in Genesis 12, we could render it this way. And in you, all the families of the earth will be grafted into you. So I'm going to bless you. I'm going to bless those who bless you. I'm going to curse those who curse you so that in you and through your seed, all the families of the earth can be grafted into you. Consider it this. Abraham's wife, Sarah, was descended from Shem. His concubine or wife or the mother of Ishmael, Hagar, was an Egyptian and was descended from Ham. And then later he is married to a woman by the name of Keturah, who is descended from Japheth or Japheth, the three sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And so all of the families of the earth came from those three sons. And in Abraham, we see all those families of the earth are part of him. They become part of his household through these unions and these relationships we had. Okay, so what does that got to do with us? Well, the word grafting should alert in your mind something that you hopefully have read, and that comes from Romans chapter 11, whereby Paul talks about us, who those of us who are in Messiah, who aren't necessarily ethnically Israeli, have nevertheless been grafted into and have become part of this family tree. And where does this family tree stem from? Abraham. Because, again, we are considered to be the seed of Abraham. Messiah, in Galatians 3:16, is called the seed of Abraham. But in verse 29 of Galatians 3, it says that if we're Messiahs, we're the seed of Abraham. So my point in all of this, the prophecy was to Abraham is if you come out of your country, if you leave your family, if you leave your father's house, if you go to a place that I show you, if you'll leave everything behind that would hold you, keep you there, and prevent you from fulfilling your purpose, if you'll obey me, present yourself as a living sacrifice, love me with all your heart, here's what's going to happen. You're going to fulfill your purpose. And in you, all of the families of the earth will be blessed. If you live a set apart life, you'll be able to distinguish for those who live in darkness the difference between life and darkness, life and death. And in that way, they'll all be blessed. And many of the families of the earth are going to be grafted into you. They're going to become part of your family. And of course, that comes because we put our faith and our trust in Messiah. But again, for that to happen, he had to be willing to let go of everything that would have held him back. And so the Creator emphasizes that when you leave this, when you leave all these familiar things, then in verse 1 he says, I'm going to take you to a land that I will show you. Now what does that say? Well, actually, let me rephrase that question. What does this not say? He didn't say, I want you to leave your country, your family, and your father's house, and go to the land of Canaan. That's not what it says. It says, go to a land that I will show you. And so presumably, when he's told to leave everything behind, at that point in time, he had no idea where he was going. He didn't know for certain that he was going to go and live in the land of Canaan, which then implies he had to place his trust in the Creator. He had to know that he was hearing the voice of God. And so when he left Ur, he traveled to Haran and he stayed there until he was 75 years old. And here Genesis 12 picks up the story. It says, and they departed to go to the land of Canaan. And so they came to the land of Canaan, and Abram passed through the land to the place of Shechem or Shechem, as far as the terebinth tree of Moreh. And the Canaanites were then in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants I will give this land. And there he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. So Abraham comes into the land. He's still called Abram at this point. And when he enters into the land, he crosses over the river. He travels to Shechem or Shechem, which today, by the way, it's called Nablus. And if you are familiar with things that go on in the land of Israel, where the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is concerned, Nablus is kind of a hotbed of Palestinian resistance to the Israelis and has been the seat of the, or one of the seats of the Intifadas. So anyway, this is the place that Abraham first goes to. Kind of interesting. By the way, it's the same place that when Israel comes out of Egypt and travels into the land, crosses over the Jordan, this is the first place they're going to go to as well. Remember in previous programs, what happens to the patriarchs, to the fathers, is a portent, a model, if you will, for what is going to happen to the children. So if Abraham first goes to Shechem, and then later Israel under Joshua first goes to Shechem or Shechem, it would only make sense that in days ahead, when God calls all of his people back to the land, chances are they're going to go to Shechem, which, by the way, again, is called Nablus. Here's why I find that interesting. Shechem is in the territory that was given to Joseph's sons. It is, in fact, where Joseph is buried. And Joseph, if you remember, is the one who was separated from his family. He lived among the Gentiles, but he knew he was the seed of Abraham. He was the one that God used that all Israel might be saved, which, by the way, is a concept that we find in Romans 11, which discusses the wild branch being grafted into the cultivated olive tree. But I'm tempted to go off on another tangent here that would take us a little bit away from our topic, so let me get back to what we're dealing with. And that is, it says, that Abram passed through the land, and the root term there, passed through, is avar. I want to show that word to you. It is spelled Ayin Beit Resh, avar. It also means to cross over, because he had to cross over from the land of the Gentiles, over the Jordan, into the land of Canaan. Here's why that's an important term to you and me, because from this root word, we get this next word, Ayin Beit Resh Yod, which is Ivri. And that word is translated as Hebrew, because Abram becomes known as Abraham HaIvri, the Hebrew. He's the one that crossed over. He crossed over from the land of the Gentiles, came over the Jordan into the land of Canaan. But more importantly, he crossed over from those things that would have held him back from fulfilling God's purpose, coming into the place where he would fulfill his purpose. He crossed over from darkness to light, from death to life. So not only does he come out of the land of the idolaters, but he has to cross over. Not only does he come out of those things that had been familiar to him, but he has to cross over into something that's very unfamiliar to him. And this is the way God has established it. And what happens to the patriarchs happens to the children. It's a model. And so not only do we have to come out of those circumstances and situations and mindsets and actions that would prevent us from fulfilling God's purpose, but we have to cross over into the place, into the way of thinking, into the lifestyle whereby we might fulfill God's purpose for us. And so in a sense, what we should come to realize is that even though we've been born again in Messiah, we've come out, he's still dealing with us, and he's bringing us to the place that we are to conform to his image, that we're being transformed by the renewing of our mind, to not see ourselves as, say in my case, a southern guy from South Georgia who grew up on grits, sweet tea, and collard greens, but to see myself as a follower of Yeshua the Messiah, and that in him and in the Word of God is where I find my identity, not as a Pentecostal or a Baptist or a Catholic, not even as an American, but as a follower of the Messiah. And so in short, what I'm trying to say here is that when we cross over into God's purposes, in a spiritual sense, we too are recognized as being a Hebrew. Not because of who our father and mother was or is, but because of who the Messiah is. Because again, if we are Messiahs, we are the seed of Abraham. And Abraham was called Ivri, Hebrew. You and I, in Messiah, are recognized as Hebrew. Not because of our bloodline, but because of how we live our life. We are following in the footsteps of the patriarchs. And so Hebrew is not just an ethnic term. I would dare say it's more than that. It's a spiritual term. Now, it mentions in the verse that we read that Abraham came to the terebinth of Moreh, which a lot of commentators believe was a particular tree where these oracles that lived in the land of Canaan would meet, and they would say things, and they would prophesy, and they would make incantations and all these kinds of things. That's the belief of what this terebinth tree is or was. So then, why did Abraham go there? The word more is interesting because that is the Hebrew word to teach or to instruct. And so perhaps God directed him to come to this particular place and this particular tree that he could begin to teach and instruct the inhabitants of Canaan, idolaters, pagans, about the one and only God. In other words, these Canaanites that were already there in the land, God brings Abram out of a land of idolaters to take him to a land of idolaters. Why? Perhaps to teach them of their idolatry and that they should turn from that to the one true God. In short, you know what Abraham was doing? He was making disciples. He was walking in that purpose, which was to be a source of blessing to all the families of the earth. All the families would have included the Canaanites of that day and time. And it's here that the Lord appeared to him for the first time. And here's what he said, "Unto you and your seed I will give this land." And here's why I wanted to accentuate this verse here, because we in Messiah are the seed of Abraham. And so this promise is not just to those who are physical lineage of Abraham, but it's also to those of us who are in Messiah and regarded as the seed of Abraham. You cannot extract the land from the covenant that we have become partakers of. This is a promise to us as well. In fact, I want to read once again a verse that I've alluded to many times, Galatians 3:29. It says this, "And if you are Messiah's, then you are Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise." What's that promise entail? Not only being a source of blessing to all the families of the earth, but to you and to your seed, I'm going to give this land. I believe that speaks to us on multiple levels. One of them, yes, is physical. One of them is literal. But one of them also alludes to the fact that if we come out from the nations, we cross over into where God has called us to be and start doing what God has called us to do, then we take possession of that purpose. We possess and we live and we inhabit that God has ordained that we should be and that we should fulfill, that we would be a source of blessing to all the families of the earth. And so all of this brings us to this point. We're talking about the restoration. The initial point of the restoration is the repentance aspect, to shuv, to return. And so that returning to God, to God's ways, that all things might be restored, that we might be what He's called us to be, has to begin in the heart. That's where it's conceived. That's what God wants first. But from there, it will permeate our mind, the soulish part of us, our emotions. And eventually, it's going to grow legs and arms, and it's going to start walking these things out and start building these things in a very literal and a physical sense, meaning that God's going to call us to leave country, family, father's house, things that hold us back in our heart first, and then in our mind. But then there's coming a day, ladies and gentlemen, maybe not in our lifetime, but there is coming a day when He will call all of His people, all of those who are ethnically Israeli, who are in Messiah, all of those who are not Israeli, but who are in Messiah, and consequently the seed of Abraham. He will call us all back, physically speaking, to that land. So then the restoration of all things really reveals who is the seed of Abraham. You see, like the patriarchs, we too are sojourners. You maybe were born here, grown up here. This is what you're familiar with. But if you are in Messiah, if you are a follower of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, then you are a sojourner, just like Abraham was. And all of us are being called to return to our God, the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and Jacob. As I close in these last couple of minutes here, several years ago I did a teaching called Lost and Found, and it was based on the parables of Luke 15. And basically what we have here is, I believe, the process of restoration, because the first parable is the parable of the lost sheep. And the lost sheep parable is not so much about that the lost sheep didn't know who the shepherd was. He recognizes his voice. It's that the lost sheep didn't know who he was. You see, we lost out on the fact that our identity in Messiah is as Abraham's seed, and in a spiritual sense, Hebrew. And so we need to come to the realization of who we are in Messiah. And then the parable of the lost coin speaks to how we are supposed to live to keep God's instructions and commandments as He has commanded His people. And then finally, the lost son speaks to where we belong, returning to our Father's house. And Abram's journey teaches us about this. And so that's why next week we're going to come back and look at part two of Abram's journey. See you then.
Like what you're hearing? Become a Bill Cloud Premium Partner to watch or listen to hundreds of hours of teachings and resources on demand. Go to BillCloud.com/subscribe to start watching today.